Today, we will hear a talk on steps 6 and 7. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and 7 humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Please help me give a warm welcome to Andy L. from San Rafael, California. Come on in, Andy.
Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. Good evening, wherever you might be. My name is Andy Lewis, and I have alcoholism. And the reason I say I have alcoholism is because I've been sober quite a while, and I still can behave badly. And alcoholism continues on. Those of you who are new, sadly, we don't magically get rid of the ism. I would say that with 25 people here, there aren't enough folks here for me to talk about humility. But I would just lost you guys. Oh, do you see me? I'm sorry, I lost you guys for a second.
We can see you.
I want to, I'm sorry?
We got you. We see you.
You got me? Okay, great. So I want to use the big book and the 12 and 12 to kind of talk about steps 6 and 7. And then, of course, I have kind of my own take on what those have meant to me over the years. But let me qualify for a moment. I got sober on July 20th, 1989. So I celebrated 34 years of continuous sobriety in this summer. And I say continuous sobriety because in my experience, lots of people come in and go out and come in and go out, and we welcome you back, and there's no shame or stigma attached. People's journeys are their journeys. I can only tell you my story. I had the great luxury of being kissed on the cheek by God the day that I got sober. I had a run pretty much from 12 to 39 where I didn't draw a sober breath. And it wasn't until considerably after the fact, when a member of our fellowship asked me, well, what happened the day that you stopped drinking and had no desire to use a drink ever again, or at least until that point and to this point today? And I was, it kept me up for 3 or 4 days thinking about that. What power had I imagined or created? And truth be told, the kiss on the cheek by God notion was kind of how it was for me. I like to think of it as kind of higher self coming in and taking over lower self, kind of a rift in the universe. There was that moment of clarity. I was on a hike with my wife, and I started to cry, and I had also taken all kinds of combinations of alcohol and other substances before I went on a hike, because my approach to life was enhancing the sunrise and all the other things that were natural to our world. And I started to cry, and she asked me what I wanted to do. And she asked me what's wrong. And I said, I can't get high. And that was the first time in 27 years where it didn't work. And it scared me. And the following day, this was on a Sunday, the following day I went into my office, and the guy who working there, he didn't drink. I didn't hang out with anyone that didn't drink, so I had no frame of reference. And I knocked on his door and I said, I need help, Joe. His name is Joe Millar. He said, I've been waiting for you, right? He taught me my first principle, traction, not promotion. He'd never gotten in my face. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't hang out with anybody that didn't drink. And my frame of reference was drugs, alcohol, and, you know, taking it to the limit without killing myself in the short term. Of course, I was killing myself in the long term. But my task today is to talk about 6 and 7. Frequently referred to as the forgotten steps, right? Or the God steps. Why is there so little lineage in the big book, right? What happens? This is where we move from self-reliance to a reliance on a higher power. And I would say to you that once you do 5, which is essentially the first time you do 5, it's a retrospective, right? It's a historical rendering of what you did and who you harmed and how you can get free of it. But underlying that 5th step, of course, is what we refer to as traits, defects, character defects, or sin, if you will. Sin coming from an archery term, beginning to miss the bullseye, missing the mark, right? If you read any of the history of AA, Bill used character defects and shortcomings interchangeably. He just didn't want to be redundant. So I don't really see that much of a difference between those two terms. But let me go to the big book, because I think it's important to give some context or contextualize this discussion. So on page 75 in the big book, it says, after we do the fourth step, it says, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. It goes on and on. And then at the end, it says, the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We'll feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And then the critical part, returning home, we find a place we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. So we pull the book down from the shelf and we sit quietly for an hour and we review the first five propositions. And then it goes into the building metaphors, mortar and sand. Have we built a strong foundation, et cetera, et cetera. One cannot do six and seven without doing five in whatever way possible, because in five, no matter how crappy you think you did it the first time, it's way better than not doing it. And when you take the book down from the shelf and you review the five propositions, I will tell you that I've sponsored hundreds of guys over the years, and not one has come to me and said, you know, I made mortar without sand. My building is not strong enough. You know, not one has come to me and said, perhaps we ought to review the fifth step again. They all were relieved to have an opportunity not to be with me for an hour and to review the first five propositions. So then we go to page 76. It says, are we ready to let God remove from us all the things which we admitted are objectionable? When ready, we say something like this. And then it gives us the seven-step prayer. When it says something like this in the book, and it says that periodically in the book around prayer, it means you can create your own prayer. You don't have to follow the precise prayers in the book. You can create your own prayers. And for me, it's been useful over time to do that in certain circumstances. But we have a lot of flexibility in AA. And I would say to you, I think that the biggest aha moment in recovery for me was understanding that the first 100 underline God as we understood him, because it creates a huge tent, an opportunity for everybody to join in or not join in. No one need ask you your view of higher power. That's personal. You can share it or not. And no one need criticize that aspect of your perspective. And after you read the seven-step prayer, it says, we have completed step seven. And then I say, what the heck? What do you mean I completed it? I didn't do anything. I'm a big fan of not doing stuff. Tom Sawyer is my hero. I love one, two, and three. Steps one, two, and three. They're only propositions. They don't require me to do anything. Can't tell you how many actions I took from my couch and never got off my couch before I got sober. Right? Sadly, step four requires us to do action, and five, and then six and seven. So I'm going to go to the 12 and 12 now, okay? I'm going to go to page 63, which is the first page on the sixth step. And it talks about having enough willingness and honesty without any reservations whatever. And without any reservations whatever is italicized. And all of the information in these books is critically important to save our lives. I mean, after all, we're just trying to save your life around here. However, when it's italicized, it's like, you know, a slap in the top in the head, like, pay attention. This is really important. This is italicized. So it talks about God can, under certain conditions, remove defects of character. And then further down, it says, I simply could not stop drinking and no human being could do the job for me. Right? Now, a lot of people say, well, God remove the desire to drink, right? God remove the desire to drink in step one. For many of us, we have that occurrence. For others, it takes a longer time, an educational variety, some kind of spiritual remedy over time. But there's a relationship from being granted the release from alcohol, the fatal obsession, as it refers to in the 12 and 12. And then further along, it says, we have an instinctive desire for self-preservation, yet we seem bent on self-destruction. Love that. It's a great line, right? You know, I want to survive. I want to live. I thought alcohol was keeping me alive, or at least it kept me away from feeling bad, which was easily translatable into, oh, that's icky. I don't want to deal with it. I have to run away from that stuff that makes me uncomfortable. But sadly, King Alcohol caught up with me and required me to do some things that I didn't want to do, essentially acts against my will. By the way, I always think of 4 through 9 as the steps that are acts against the alcoholic will. No alcoholic I know wants to do 4 through 9. Oh, horrible. It's just horrible. What an order. I can't go through with it. You know, it's 4 through 9. So bent on self-destruction. So it says on page 64 in the 12 and 12, we took a terrific beating by alcohol, but by the grace of God, he entered us and expelled the obsession. And then on 65, it says, most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires. Isn't it strange that we often let them far exceed their intended purpose? So it talks about God will forgive our derelictions. Yeah, that's what you get for having your iPad on a soft surface. Sorry about that. I'm still here. Can't get rid of me yet. In the 12 and 12, it talks about God will certainly forgive our derelictions. He doesn't render us white as snow, but without our cooperation. So what's the work ahead is the question, right? What's the work ahead? So my experience has been that the work ahead is a lifetime job. You know, it requires us to do certain things. when it talks about entirely ready in step 6, so what does that mean? So if we follow the logic from step 5, and we look at our limitations and our humanness in step 6, it's really a rear view look, right? It's like driving a car and looking in the rear view. But when we get to 7, this leads us into the future, right? It shifts our perspective. And it's like looking through the windshield. So it's a shift. But 6 and 7, of course, are inextricably linked. I will point out that Bill essentially on his own wrote the 12 steps and 12 traditions, which is a pretty amazing thing if you think about it and you use it as a tool in your recovery. He was 15 years sober when he wrote this thing in 1950. So one has to assume that he heard for 15 years, Bill, why did the first 100 only give 2 little lines to 6 and 7 if they're so damn important? So I think Bill got the message and decided to extrapolate. Now, I must say that alcohol is really not what our program's about. I look at it as the gateway drug to a spiritual remedy for our spiritual malady. And if alcohol was what we were about, they'd mention it in more than one step. We only mention it in step 1. I would say to you that 6 and 7 are really what we're about. Causes and condition, right? Underlying traits, underlying character defects, underlying sins. How we lived as human beings, how badly we lived as human beings when we were drinking, all the people we hurt, all the lives that we trashed, etc. So let me now go to step 7. Okay. Actually, let me stay on step 6, just in terms of talking about self-righteous anger, gluttony, taking our comfort. From these defects, I love this line, we must surely get a warped yet definite satisfaction. Yes, I got a warped yet definite satisfaction from gluttony, sloth, pride, you know, procrastination. And most of us wouldn't give these up. It says, seriously, we would not be giving them up if they didn't cause us excessive misery. You know, the books are very precise with the language. They could have said anything. They could have said, God couldn't what if he were found? They could have said that. They didn't say that, right? They said sought. Language is very specific in our book. It's useful to pay attention to it. And then further on in 6, it says, the difference between the boys and the men is the difference between striving for self-determined objective and the perfect objective, which is of God. So men and women and girls, boys and men, you know, we're going for no perfection, because only step one is where we had the 100% admission that we were powerless and our life was unmanageable. The only question in step 6 really is, are we ready? Right? Are we ready? Right? So it says, this I cannot give up. This I will never give up. You should never say, but it talks about the grace of God. When I got sober, I didn't really know what grace meant. I had to look it up. It means unmerited or unearned gift. A guy just told me recently it comes from the Roman centurions. During the Caesars, they would give certain soldiers who fought really well extra pay. And it was known as, I don't know what it is in Latin, but it was known as grace. And, you know, for me, grace is like extra pay, but I don't have to really do anything. Again, to refer to my earlier comment, I don't like doing stuff. I do stuff, but I don't like doing it. I'd rather have you do stuff. So now we go to step 7. In step 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings, right? Since this step so specifically concerns itself with humility, we should pause here to consider what it is. The attainment of greater humility is a founding principle of all of AA's 12 steps. So humility comes into play always in all the steps. We don't really notice it until we get to this step and we read this information. Without humility, you can't live much useful purpose, not in adversity, be able to summon a common faith that can meet any emergency. So it says, certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement, but we're sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula alone. Character building and spiritual values have come first, and material satisfaction is not the purpose of living. You know, I've been around a few days, and I would submit to you that there are three things that take people out: emotionalism, sensualism, and materialism, or some combination of those. Usually when people go out, they don't, if they've been around for a bit and they don't have a good second step, that usually is kind of a tell, you know. They have not been restored to sanity or had the desire to be restored to sanity or even admitted that they were insane by any definition. So on page 72 in the 12 and 12, it talks about good character has something one needed to get on with the business of being self-satisfied. This is how we used to look at it, right? We'll have good character if it gets to our ends, which were typically material or what's in it for me or how can I get over or any combination of those notions. But it says we lacked the anchorage to any permanent values, right? As long as we place self-reliance first, genuine reliance upon a higher power was out of the question. That basic ingredient of all humility, the desire to seek God's will, was missing. So I guess we're going to have to deal with the notion of higher power, because on my own steam, juice, power, and self-reliance, I can only go so far. You know, in the fourth step in the fear inventory, it talks about, wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? It went as far, it was as good as far as it went, some language like that. It's good to be self-reliant, but it's better to be in concert with a higher power. It's good to do works and have great faith. Together, they're a great marriage in my experience. So a whole lifetime geared to self-centeredness cannot send in reverse all at once. Rebellion dogs are every step. But we are now walking in a new way. So then on 74 in the 12 and 12, it says, we've taken a square look at some of these defects and discussed them with another, 4 and 5, of course, and we're willing to have them removed. And we have had some moments of real peace of mind. You know, I think after a fifth step, a lot of us get a lot of relief. A lot of us, you know, kind of get the sense that there is a force greater than ourselves that can do for us what we can't do for ourselves. But my experience in recovery is that there's a whole lot of stuff you can't do for yourself. You got to do the work. So I'm not of the belief that if in the seventh step prayer, God is removing those things that stand in the way of you being useful to God and your fellows, that doesn't absolve you from doing action that will enhance and minimize, you know, your lower self, right? So your defects of character can be materially affected by doing good action and doing things differently. You're not doomed to wait till God removes them. If you wait till God removes stuff, you'd be so selfish and self-centered, you'd never do anything for anybody else. And, you know, the end game in my view, the 6 and 7 step, the end game is living a truly meaningful life is a life of service, right? The third part of the 12 step, practicing the principles in all my affairs. These steps are all, you know, it's a spiritual tapestry. They're all weaved together. We don't have to isolate them out. We're talking about 6 and 7 because that's the nature of this group. We focus on steps on a daily basis, which is useful and helpful, but never forget that they're all inextricably linked. When someone says to me, you know, kind of offhandedly, well, what step are you on? I say all of them because I embrace all of them every day. You know, I have a prayer and a meditative life. I have a spiritual reading. I'm in service. I have a great AA day today. A meeting with a sponsee after this meeting. And then I'm exercising, and then I'm having dinner with another sponsee, and I'm going to a meeting called Fathers in Recovery tonight, right? Men who have children and relationships. Boy, talk about a shit show. Sorry, I cursed. One curse isn't bad for a guy like me. I'm a New Yorker. In my blood. At any rate, so further on page 73, it says, refusing to place God first, we had deprived ourselves of his help. But now the words, of myself, I am nothing, the Father doeth the work, began to carry promise and meaning. A great turning point in our lives came when we sought for humility, something we really wanted rather than something we must have. So there's a shift that goes on. Now, there's a part right here on page 76, which is very seldom discussed, but I think it's critical. So I'm going to read the whole paragraph because I think it's really critical. 76 in the 12 and 12. How am I doing for time, Sonny? I'm good, right? Yeah, okay. Chief activator of our defects has been self-centered fear, primarily fear that we'd lose something we already possessed or we would fail to get something we demanded. Living upon a basis of unsatisfied demands, we were in a state of continual disturbance and frustration. Therefore, no peace was to be had unless we could find the means of reducing those demands. The difference between a demand and a simple request is plain to anyone. So, if the chief activator of defects is self-centered fear, then it would behoove us to take a look at what gets us crazy and fearful. My experience in recovery over a long period of time is most of the stuff I worry about never happens. So I've short-circuited the whole notion of getting fearful about shit that doesn't happen. Oh, I cursed again. Put me down for two, Sonny. I think it's important that we have an understanding about fear as a tempering device for our recovery. It's good to have natural fear. It's good to have concerns. It's good to be fearful because it allows us to, excuse me, flight or fight or develop some coping mechanisms and some grit so we can deal with stuff as it comes up in our life. And then it says, we did admit when we were powerless over alcohol and came to believe that a power of ourselves could restore us, we could find the grace to the deadly obsession. Right? There must be hope of the same result respecting any of the problem we could possibly have. Well, I would tell you that the great hope in recovery for me is that I no longer think of me exclusively. You know, the grosser handicaps in 6 and 7, the character defects, I like to look at them as traits. I think that the first 100 did us somewhat of a disservice. A lot of people come in here with great trauma and great dysfunction, and they've been beat around the ears their early life, and they come in with lots of scar tissue. I don't think it helps to refer to us as defective. We already think that. Most of us think that already. I think traits is less pejorative. And for example, one can use humor to draw people to you, or sarcasm to cut people up. So we all have these kind of yin yang plus minus capabilities that we can employ. But I think for me, 6 and 7 is really where the pedal meets the metal. It's where the work gets done. It's what we're here for. And I think for me, the greatest thing about 6 and 7 is that 10th step and 11th step reminds us of the four areas that we have to look at every day: selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, right? And when they crop up, not if, when. So 10 is a recapitulation of 4 through 9. So if you do a 10th step, you're going to look at things that still bedevil you, that are objectionable. I would tell you that things that I don't think are any more objectionable may be debated by my wife and or children and my loved ones. So the pointy aspects of my traits, i.e. character defects, shortcomings, may in fact, I may have a more generous view than my loved ones. However, I have to live with myself, and I have to embrace my level of recovery, where I am, and how it may be of benefit to those of around me and the fellows that I interact with. Let me say, though, it's a great day to be sober. It's great to be at Beacon. I love you guys. Really enjoy this format. I was turned on to it early by my friend Joe D during COVID. And whenever I can make it, I make it. And I bring people to it because it's a spectacular opportunity to really drill down on the steps every day, and also to hear a different perspective. And then go into the breakout rooms and get everybody's take on how crappy the speaker was. Great to be here. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate your time.